Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show.
A few years ago, Craig discovered a young, ambitious copywriter named Nate Rifkin. Now, for the last decade plus, Nate has been setting the copywriting world on fire. He spent years working with Agora Publishing Company and has brought in more than $20 million through his copywriting efforts. Nate's also contributed several high-value articles to ETR over the last few months and has graciously offered to spend some time with me, Jeff Steen, on mic this episode talking about the very important role of storytelling in copywriting. And who knows storytelling better than Nate? Well, you're going to get some huge copywriting tips this episode. You'll also hear some amazing stories from Nate's own life that he's used in his sales letters and marketing campaigns over the years. And believe me, no one tells a better story than he does. Before we get to that, though, I want to remind you that ETR Radio is brought to you by the Perfect Day Formula. Grab your free copy of this blueprint to success and living the life of your dreams at freeperfectdaybook.com. It's a fantastic motivational follow-up to the interview with Nate and gives you the tools and techniques you need to create real value for the people who matter. Now let's get to that interview with copywriter extraordinaire, Nate Rifkin. Hey there, ETR listeners. Jeff Steen again at the mic. Craig is turning it over to me this week so that I can have a conversation with one of the coolest copywriters I have been fortunate enough to work with, Nate Rifkin. Nate, thanks for spending some time with us today. We're going to get some great wisdom from you.
Hey, thank you for actually calling me cool. I think you can invoice me for that one, I guess.
I don't get called cool myself very often, but I feel like it's the age of copywriters. cool. If there is such a thing, I don't know. But there are a lot of people out there who are looking for some insight, especially in the digital world now. I feel like the nature of copywriting is changing a little bit, maybe, but we'll get into that here in a second. So before we get into, you know, the hardcore wisdom, can you give our listeners just a little bit of background about how you got into copywriting and if you have any specializations in that area?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, thank you for having me here, Jeff. I'm looking forward to imparting, you know, any kind of wisdom I can that can help people, really just jack up the profits in their business. Well, back in 2005, I was going to college in UMass Amherst, which is, you know, in the western part of Massachusetts. Right. And it's like, there's gorgeous falls there. I remember it was just late at night one night in my dorm, and I'm just kind of surfing the web, checking my email, just sitting at the computer, by myself, and I was just kind of feeling a little depressed. I was just kind of bored. And I stumbled across an advertisement for a book called Killer Orgasms. And I was just, it kind of stopped me in my track. And I looked at, and for whatever reason, I just looked at the author's name and I decided, whoever the heck writes a book with this title, I want to find out who the heck this guy is. For some reason, that just popped in my mind. So I Googled the name, and as it turns out, that would just completely change the course of my life, because the author's name was Gary Halbert. And unbeknownst to me, he is arguably one of the greatest copywriters alive. And he, unbeknownst to me, had recently published like decades of his wisdom online for free for anyone to look at. And I just stumbled upon it. And the website, when I landed on his website, because it was the first result in search engines, it was like the most valuable website on the internet. You know, he wrote, I have no idea how you've gotten here, but you've just stumbled upon the most important, you know, most valuable website you could possibly find on the internet. I was like, what the heck is going on here? And he was right. And at the time, I was wondering, I was certainly piecing together, what the heck do I want to do with my life? And I knew I wanted to be a business owner. I knew I wanted to be, you know, make a very prosperous life for myself. And I also knew that I wasn't really a well-connected person going to like an Ivy League school. I didn't know any business owners, but I loved writing. And from there on out, I was obsessed with copywriting. I dropped out of college, and I've basically for the last 12 years, more than 12 years now, I've continued my obsession with it. So that's a little bit of background info for you.
Other than it fitting into your desire to create a prosperous life for yourself, and it was self-driven, so you got your sort of own business there, and it checking off those boxes, what was so compelling about copywriting specifically? Because you could have gone into other forms of writing.
Yeah, I could have. And I have, not in a professional way, but I've always loved writing stories. I even thought about becoming a screenwriter. That's as far as that got. but yeah, what I love about it is someone phrased it really well. I think Ted Nicholas was the one who, a man named Ted Nicholas was someone who originally sort of coined this phrase. It was like, it's the only way left for the little guy to get rich. And I know we already covered the fact that I want to become prosperous, but I think there's a shade of difference here, because it's about the little guy getting rich. Copywriting is a way for someone to become a one man or one woman marketing department, and PR department and sales department. It's a way for just one person who has a great product or service to be able to harness the power of persuasion to take people in the world from complete strangers who just don't know you, they don't know your service. You can introduce them to your world, and you can show them that this is something that's going to change their life. And just via writing, get them to buy your product or subscribe to your service. There are very, very few things in life that wield such power as copywriting. So as someone who just didn't really have, again, it's not like I owned a business or had any business experience or connections in that world, something that could just take over and harness the power of all these different things and be able to do it in an automatic way that you can scale up and make bigger. I couldn't say no to that. And I feel like other business owners, if they don't know about this, they should, because they're already struggling. They're already trying to grow their business, and copywriting could be their key to just make everything expand and flow like magic.
It's interesting. I want to dig into sort of, you mentioned telling stories, and that's of course a lot of what I want to talk about today in the heart of copywriting. But as far as creating a business around it, how did you begin to get clients in the door? Was it word of mouth and referrals that way? Did you put much energy into actually promoting yourself as a brand in the early days?
I did not, because of ignorance and probably a lot of stupidity there. after I dropped out of college, I packed up my stuff. I left. I went home for a brief period. I just moved back in with my mom. That was a very brief period though, because I didn't want to become a cliche.
Right.
Yeah, back in Massachusetts there. I learned copywriting to build my own business. So I didn't really promote myself at all, because my mindset was, hey, I'm going to sell my own products. Why? I don't want to become a copywriter for anyone else, you know? And which I think was the wrong approach. Years went by where essentially I worked to create health products with other experts, and then I'd scramble to write the copy for them. And then I would bust out my credit card and buy some very large ads online. And I'd sit there at my computer waiting for the results to pour in. And I still, while I was doing all this, I didn't really meet anyone. I didn't know anyone. So it never occurred to me to actually go out to the world and say, hey, by the way, I have this skill set that I'm growing and I can use it to help your business. It just never occurred to me until years and years and years later, when a friend of mine actually introduced me to probably the largest client for copywriters of all time. I can go into that real fast if you want me to.
Sure, sure. I want to dive also into some of your specialty, but go ahead. I mean, I love anecdotes.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it is a pretty cool story. So one day I was on the phone with my bank because I'd overdrawn my account. I almost bounced a check, and they wouldn't remove a bunch of the overdraft fees, and I was broke, and I actually started crying on the phone as I hung up on the phone with my bank. It was a Saturday morning. And something in me just snapped. I was working manual labor jobs just to put food on the table. And I'd made one connection in this business. It's a man named Doberman Dan. And he actually, he teaches some amazing, old school marketing techniques, for building your business. So I snapped and, I drove to FedEx and I printed out a letter that I meant to send him, an actual physical letter, and I taped a dime to the top of it, a silver dime, because I knew he would be into that. He's into precious metals. And I mailed him the letter, and it was essentially asking him if I could take on some of his client load. And he got back to me, and I'm sitting out there all alone in Aurora, Colorado, in my little, you know, condo. And he actually gave me a call and he said, I don't have any work for you right now, but I can introduce you to someone. I said, okay, great. And a couple months later, he actually did introduce me to a company called Agora, which is based in Baltimore. For those who don't know, Agora is sort of the biggest direct response driven information publishing company online, which is kind of funny because no one's heard of Agora itself. But that's sort of like hardly anyone's heard of Procter & Gamble, but everyone knows about Crest toothpaste. Well, it's the same with Agora. They're $1.5 billion company, and all that revenue is driven by long copy. And they basically recruited me. They flew me in, and I showed them basically years of failed marketing experiments I'd done where I was like this close to success. And they hired me, and I packed up all my stuff in my car and I drove across the country and I worked for them for a year and a half. And actually, they're still my clients to this day. And specifically, they recruited me to help them start a new nutritional supplement franchise. So to answer your question about my specialty, it's always been health, and now even more specifically, copy for nutritional supplements.
And Mark Ford, famously the founder of Early to Rise, was also the founder of Agora, wasn't he?
He was very much involved from the beginning. I've never met him, so I've never actually asked him for the story. But yeah, he was, from what I can understand, you know, when Bill Bonner started up Agora, Mark was instrumental in really, really, really expanding it. Yeah, absolutely.
Gotcha. Yeah. And he still does the Palm Beach newsletter, I believe, doesn't he? Or did he pass that along?
He's as far as I know, that dude cannot say no to work. So I'm sure he's doing he's that prolific. And probably a bunch of other stuff. I'd love to meet him at some point, but we just haven't run into each other.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, we're still, you know, we still leverage a lot of his fantastic content from the early days of Early to Rise. So yeah, a lot of wisdom there, a lot of experience. All right, let's dig into some of the copywriting nitty gritty, because I know that there are a lot of entrepreneurs and small business owners out there who would love to get a little bit more insight on how the process works, what they should be looking at, especially in this day and age when digital is king. When you and I first started talking about this, I know we've gone back and forth on some content, and anyone listening who wants to read some Nate Rifkin content, they can go to earlytorise.com and just search for his name. Storytelling is absolutely key to sales and marketing. So I'm wondering why it's so key. Because you talk about hitting pain points in marketing, address solving problems in marketing and sales. Why does there need to be a story attached to that?
That's a great question. I have to give a little caveat that it's not 100% necessary. It's only like 98% necessary.
Okay, all right.
I mean, I know someone's going to be listening to this razor. It's like, what are you talking about? I bought something from a catalog the other day and there was no story. It's like, well, I'm happy for you. But 99% of marketing can be enhanced by a story so much that you'll never go back the other way. And the, you know, there are a couple reasons for that. One is that humans are just wired to listen to stories. We're wired to appreciate them. We're wired to not turn away from them. We loved hearing stories as children. We loved going to movies. To this day, novels that reach hundreds of pages are devoured by people. We desire entertainment in a way that cannot be quenched for the duration of our lives. And yet, as marketers, we're always trying to capture someone's attention. So it's kind of this ironic thing. Businesses have all this wonderful information they want to throw in the faces of potential customers, like, you know, here's this great information on how great my product is. Here's this amazing content. You know, I can teach you really cool stuff and you'll like me as a result. And people will do their darndest to ignore all that and shove that aside and run sprints towards television shows and YouTube videos and movies and very large books and plunk down money purely to be entertained, with knowing that they are not going to learn a darn thing and it doesn't matter. And it all comes back to us being hardwired to enjoy stories. So that's one factor. The other factor is, while we're enjoying stories, we are able to absorb information in a way where our BS filter is lowered. Not just our BS filter, it's actually, I think, amalgamated into something where it's more like just a no filter, where even if something's not BS, we're still just like, no, I don't want any more information. We're inundated with so much information that our default is just no. But when we listen to stories, it's a way for us to learn, it's a way for us to integrate new information and be open about it without that heavily biased no filter shutting us off from a new opportunity. So if that's why some of the best teachers, by the way, use stories, because while you think you're just listening to something nice and entertaining, your mind is getting opened in a whole new way. So that's why stories, I think, can add rocket fuel to any marketing message.
Yeah, that's some pretty good insight. But I didn't even think about the sort of taking down your defense mechanism, making it easier to hit the vulnerable points of whatever a person is struggling with, or to build that connection with an audience by taking down those defenses. I wonder too, and maybe this ties into some of what you said, but you think of ways that brands in their marketing campaigns can do something that makes their product or their brand as a whole more memorable. And some places or some companies use, some language, like just an alliterative tagline, in the hopes that that will stick. Jingles is something, of course, that's been used for ages and ages. But I'm wondering if storytelling is pretty much the same, or is that more of a connectivity tool than it is sort of a memory tool?
You know, that's a really good question. It's so good that, you know, I'll give some feedback on that. But it's one of those ones where I'm just going to keep thinking about it. And okay. I think the answer will evolve over time. For right now, you know, I'm just running through my head, what do companies successfully do when they integrate both like a catchy jingle or branding and storytelling? And one of the ways is that the catchy jingle that gets their kind of brand embedded in your brain, building out that sort of image that people associate with the product, is sort of almost... it's like the first step. And then once you are more integrated in their world, that gives the company an opportunity to talk more about their product and give a backstory. For instance, I'll just go to the classic example, which is Apple. Everyone loves to talk about what a success Apple is, which is perfectly justified, because, you know, they were an underdog in the computer industry, but now they are iconic. Right. And they're masters of branding. I mean, you can walk down streets of any major city and you can see Apple's branding, not only in advertisements, but also their storefronts. So that's sort of step one. But anyone who's at all interested in the company of Apple or their products or just cult, human culture in general, of course, has heard the incredible story of Steve Jobs. It's very much like a hero's journey. And they've heard the stories of, you know, Apple's employees, as what is that t-shirt joke, 14 hours a day and loving it. They've heard stories of how they've worked relentlessly to build out these products, and how they, how Steve kept pushing the company to develop more innovative products that were, that actually delivered on what users wanted. So that, that's sort of a subtle example of how a company itself, it has a brand, but it has a story supporting the brand. And there's a big difference. Anyone can choose a color and have a logo designed in a certain way, but what's behind it? That's where the storytelling comes into play. It's not just a facade. There's an actual foundation behind it. So the brand is almost like the facade on a building. The story sort of makes up the structure of the building itself as you weave your way into it.
Interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting analogy. Always good to have a visual component. Well, it, which actually is a good transition, good segue into what I was going to ask next, is that we're talking in broad strokes here, broad terms about storytelling and stories as it features into marketing. But what makes up a story in the marketing world? What are the components that are typical or necessary in a story?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, you know, I'll give you an example. Just half an hour ago, you know, I'm downstairs in my apartment complex, you know, here in Denver. You know, it's summer, and I know it's 9:52 a.m. and I know at 10 a.m. I gotta get my butt into my seat to do this podcast with you. Sitting there waiting to get, you know, for my coffee to get filled, and I've got my eye on the clock, and all of a sudden I realize that I might be a few minutes late. So I turn around and I get my coffee. I'm almost spilling it on my hand, and I look up, and once again, this is not the first time it's happened, there's a note taped to the elevator doors that they're broken. So now all of a sudden I realize I have to make it up 12 floors to get, so anyway, that didn't actually happen, but I actually did make it on time. So everyone knows the elevators work perfectly. But I was thinking about our time together this morning, and I want to be on time. And I realized every little bit of our life is a little narrative that we can tell as a story. The non-story version of that would have been, oh yeah, I made sure to be here on time, and it was a frustrating experience dealing with the issues making me late. See, that's a summary of a story. A story itself is if I actually take you by the hand and I lead you through the experience and I give you sensory details that make you feel as though you can actually be in the experience. For instance, I could say, yeah, you know, I'm doing this podcast with you, you know, by the way, I live in Denver. Or I can talk about how, you know, just an hour earlier, I was walking down this Cherokee Street and the sun was just beating down on me in this cloudless day here high, you know, in the high altitude of Denver, Colorado. There's a color, there is a temperature, there's a sensation, there's movement. Just sprinkling a bit of that into your description can turn an otherwise uninteresting summary into a story. So it's essentially, instead of giving a after the fact breakdown of something that happened, you actually say, hey, let's go back in time, or let's go forward in time, and let me take you by the hand and actually lead you through something and give you an experience as if it's happening right now.
Yeah, that's a very good way to put it. As you were describing it, I thought of another way to put that, perhaps, is it's breaking down the wall between sort of a third person objective analysis of a situation, which seems very cold and fact based, and then a first person, like you said, experience and experiential. I am going through this, and because I am the one living it, then therefore there's more to it than just the basic facts.
Yeah, it becomes real.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, think about, before you go on, I just got to mention that. Think about the news today. Think about the popularity of straight news casting, you know, broadcast, supposedly straight, versus commentary, where it's like one person and he's just giving his opinion. Think Howard Stern, think Rush Limbaugh. And he ain't on anymore, but back in the day, there was Bill O'Reilly. I mean, right. People tuned in knowing it was one guy, and half the time he's going to talk about himself and then give his opinion and tell stories. And like I said, people are wired for it. They crave it. So yeah, absolutely. Making it a personal experience with someone sort of makes it come alive.
So a good copywriter is essentially just a really good storyteller.
You know, among other things, I think the way I'd put it is, a great copywriter must be a great storyteller, and a great storyteller has what it takes to potentially become a good copywriter if they want to jump into this crazy world.
The crazy world, yeah. I'm wondering if there's a point at which there has to be where there's too much storytelling, too much detail, too much sensory information, and how you figure out when that's happening or when you're on that line.
There definitely can. One example is that, look, we're here to make money. That's what copywriting's about. It's not necessarily to entertain people as much as we can. So when someone hears a story, they're involved, they are realizing that your product can help them. You have some choices. You can keep telling a story, you can tell another one, or you could present them with a buy button and give them the chance to actually purchase your product. So a lot of people, especially those who are nervous about asking for the order, that's an example when, you know, the story has a purpose, but it's also supposed to have an end. And it's only one part of the sales process. So that's an example. I mean, probably a good rule of thumb is one story per marketing message. There's probably not any good reason to have two. Heck, I'm doing this right now in a sales letter I'm writing for a product I'm going to launch, I hope next year, where I actually started writing the close of a sales letter and I came up with this great story. It's like, ooh, there's this time I went to New York City and everything went wrong and it was a really, really big risk for me to take. And I started writing, I'm like, or I could just ask them to buy the darn book because they're probably ready to buy it now. So there's that. Probably one story per marketing message is best. And yeah, I think if someone has a background like writing novels, they might get a little too involved in like describing the snow, you know, on the pine tree melting and sprinkling off and hitting the deer's head below or something, and it shakes. It's like, you know, just time and place. Tell me get to the action, and there better be a good lesson involved that has to do with this amazing product.
One of the questions that came to mind as you were describing that end point, which is a very good thing to keep in mind, as you're telling the story that serves the marketing goal, the sales goal of pitching this product, should the story be structured so that the final chapter is always that product, or can you close out the story in a way that is compelling and transitions to the product? Is there a best practice there?
The ideal is you have a real story where your product or service like figuratively busts through the door and saves the day, you know, saves the person from the burning building. That is ideal. But you don't need that. And that's not always true, just because sometimes life doesn't work that way, where you have a really dramatic story about something that can go wrong in a prospect's life.
Sure.
And your product may not have even been invented yet. Like, for instance, you could tell a story. It's like, you know, 16 months ago, I was driving through the New Mexico desert. I looked down at the dashboard and saw that, you know, that dial was towards the E mark on the, on how much gas I had. We all know that feeling when you look down, it's like, oh man, I should have stopped at that gas station like 20 miles ago. And lo and behold, you know, my car broke down. It sputtered out and I had to, you know, crank it over to the side of the road. And that day, it just ruined my entire trip. And then you could go on to like, you know, and then later on, I actually developed this amazing solution where you can actually store a bit of extra gas in this bag in your trunk safely. Da, 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 da. Hey, maybe that's a good product. I just made that up. I have no idea. But there are situations where it's just like, you can have an example of a story where everything went wrong. And at the end, you present it as, look, don't let this happen to you. It could have gone another way. So that's an example where it did not perfectly segue into your product as if the product were in existence helping at the moment. So you can tell stories of worst case scenarios. You can tell inspirational stories and then make a connection to how your product could help the reader achieve that same level of success, even though the situation's a little different. That's just something where you have to logically make that transition. And as a product owner, you know, you should be able to know that. For instance, if you have a book on, you know, value investing, you know, people love to tell stories of Warren Buffett. Now, even if you're not Warren Buffett, you can make the transition where it's like, look, he is a value investor. You probably can't hire him to coach you, but you know, I've got a pretty good track record too. Right. So check out this book.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting when you brought up the story about the Mexico border and everything, and I really appreciate, by the way, that you're bringing in so many examples, because I think that is a great illustration of all of the points that you're making. The one question I have, and I have struggled with this myself in copywriting, is to what extent it's okay to embellish or even completely fabricate a story out of whole cloth just for the purposes of copywriting. Do you want to stick to reality as closely as possible, or does that really matter?
That's a great question. I got kind of two answers to that. The first one is the ethics and the morality of it.
Right. Right.
Personally, I write true stories. I've always stuck to that. And if there's going to be any sort of wiggle room there, it's that I always do my best to cut out parts of the story that are superfluous, that aren't needed, that overcomplicate things, but they're not, like, as a lawyer would say, it's not materially misleading if I leave them out.
Right.
For instance, you know, like an example would be if two events occurred and it was like 3 weeks apart and I traveled in the meantime or something, I'm not going to go into all that in the story if I can just like crunch it together. And I mean, sometimes if I don't remember the dialogue of something that happened, I'll capture the essence of that dialogue. So those are my guidelines. So from an ethical and moral standpoint, the only thing I can say is you have to come up with your own standards. And I hope those standards are where you tell true stories. So that's part one. Part two is what works from a strategic and tactical standpoint in the marketplace. And here's why, and I'll say this, there's a reason why I said this one second after the talk about morals and ethics. People can tell false stories all the time and it works. There's no denying that. I've seen it in the marketplace. People will absolutely make crap up and yes, make millions and millions and millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. It would be really simple for me to sit here on this interview and tell you, oh no, people could smell that stuff a mile away. Don't you make stuff up, because that won't make money. That's not true. It'll make tons of money. You can make money hand over fist lying. I don't think you should do it, but yeah, it's definitely doable. And I think we're both on the same page in telling, you know, stories that are actually true when we present them as true. That's part of the challenge. That's why we have to dig deeper. That's why we have to be better researchers about our product, and not just about our product, but about the market that wants our product, and about other success stories or stories of catastrophe that are involved in the market and our product, because all of those can be harnessed in a way where we don't necessarily present them as stories that happened to us, and it doesn't matter. We can tell a third person story. It's like, look what happened to this guy. You know, on November 15th in 1997, he was driving along with his family and this happened. That's very compelling. Even if the person reading or watching that story knows it ain't you, and knows you weren't even within 1,000 miles at the time the story occurred. It's okay. And it doesn't even necessarily have to involve your product right then and there, as long as you can make that connection.
Right. No, good point. And I think too, more than just the evident authenticity that comes across when you're telling a real story, which a prospect loves and connects to much more readily than they would a story that's clearly fabricated. I think when you decide for yourself that you're going to write a story that is true to life, whether it's your own or whether it's, you know, coming from a customer or someone on the outside, if in your search for that perfect story or even a viable story, you're having trouble coming up with something, then that also can help you with product development, because then you might realize, well, hey, you know, if there's no one for whom this really serves a purpose or meets a need, then maybe I should go back to the drawing board and revisit my product. And then I can actually find stories that fit the bill and make sense for the copywriting, the marketing campaigns that I'm doing.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's a, you know, that could be a hard, you know, splash of cold water to the face, and a lot of people can't handle that. But you're absolutely correct. And in fact, I've taken a stance now with some of my own businesses that I'm growing myself. I look for the story first. And if I cannot find one related to this potential product, I will not even begin the actual manufacturing of the product. I will just set it aside. That requires some planning. And not everyone has that advantage if they already have their business. But when it comes to coming up with a new product or service, yes. You'll save yourself a lot of time, a lot of frustration if you look for the story first. And the cool part is, you will get to enjoy a much, much easier flow of business as a result. A little bit of planning goes a long way in that regard.
Yeah. Well, it's its own form of market research. And if you find those stories, and there are a lot of them, that makes it clear that your product has a market out there, that there's an audience for it, well, then you produce your product, and guess what? You already have those stories in the bank, and you can leverage them pretty quickly in your marketing campaign. So, yeah. Kind of a win-win there. So definitely good advice for those people who are working on a new product or at least thinking about it. One of the questions I had is that people, and this is perhaps fits into the more traditional definition of a story, but people think of a story as something that is a little bit longer. Even if you're thinking short stories, you're thinking 10 to 20 pages or something like that. And yet in a marketing space, people don't have the attention span for that. And if you compound that with the fact that in this digital age, people are consuming information in much smaller quantities, how can you as a copywriter really get a story across in such a small space? Like, what is the technique or tactic for doing that, if you can pinpoint it?
Yeah, that is a great question. And I've got good news for you, because I want to clear up almost like a misconception folks have about stories in general. So 3 days ago, I was driving down Larimer Street. I was coming up upon a red light, and all of a sudden, this guy, he's walking across the street. And I think, okay, fine, crosswalk. You know, red light will turn green soon. Then he stops in the middle of it. He turns around and he looks right towards me. And then he starts walking right up to the front of my car. Okay, I also just use that as an example. That didn't actually happen, thank God. but how short was that? Let me ask you something, Jeff. When I said 3 days ago and then Larimer Street, Did you pick up on the fact that I was telling the story?
Yeah.
Yeah. All I had to do was I had to give a time and I had to give a location, and we're in. Time and place, and you've got yourself a story. You know, 6 months ago, I was sitting in this hammock, you know, just an hour ago, I was climbing up on the roof. It's a story. And the funny part is you only need a few more sentences to tell the conclusion of that story. Let's say you're writing an email to your customers. It could be something as simple as like, oh yeah, 2 days ago, I like hit my hand with a screwdriver as I was trying to fix my bike. And I had this idea that I had to tell you about. Let me tell you all about it. And guess what? You just ended the story. You could go on into delivering content from that point or talking about your product. And you just told a story. You started it. You ended it within a matter of a few sentences. They don't have to be long. They just have to be long enough to get your audience's attention and make them realize they're listening to a human being and not just reading a Wikipedia article.
Right, right.
So stories can be very short. Now about the longer ones, here's an interesting aspect of the digital age. There's this interesting, you know, idea going around that people are suffering from shorter attention spans. And I used to believe that, but, actually I heard something that a marketer named Ryan Dice said that clarified. Yeah. He's got a pretty big company in the space. And he said something that made a lot of sense. He said, people don't have shorter attention spans. They have the same short attention spans they always did. It's just that today we're inundated with more lousy content. So people are reacting to it. So our attention spans are just that much more noticeable. That's good news because, if you just make your content interesting, your stories interesting, you've got them. If you need a longer sales cycle, if you have a longer story to tell because you have a high-end product or maybe a product that's really specialized and sort of difficult to describe, It's okay. If you manage to grab your audience, you could keep them interested, it's okay to keep them around for longer. It's okay to dive deeper and tell them a longer story. Movies have not gotten any shorter. 90 minutes, 2 hours, they've pretty much been that way for decades, and I don't see them slowing down anytime soon. People still read novels that are several hundred pages long. I'm not saying your sales message needs to be that long, but it's just an example. Yeah, that'd be interesting. Someone out there will test it, I'm sure. Let's do it.
Yeah, well.
5 hour long VSL. Let's do it. No, I'm sure they're out there. I remember one time I was at the Baltimore office of Agora Financial, and I was going out to get a salad for lunch. And it was like at the end of this VSL, it was the close and they're about to like put the buy button up there. I'm like, all right, let me get up. And I forgot to turn it off. I come back with my salad and I sit down, I look and the FAQs are still going. I'm like, good God, this thing must be like an hour and a half long.
Jeez.
So I ate my salad and then I bought the product. No, I didn't. Anyway, so I don't even remember where I was. Oh yeah. Attention spans. Cause right. Clearly I have a long one. Yeah. So it's not a matter of being too long. It's just a matter of being too boring. So focus on that and you won't have to worry about like, oh no, I've got a lot to say and I'm not sure the audience with their attention span can handle it. It's not a matter of being too long. It's not a matter of attention spans getting shorter. It's just a matter of being interesting enough.
Well, first of all, well said. And I think that's very important for people to recognize that because, you know, one of the things we're struggling with sometimes at ETR is, should we have a longer sales lander or, you know, a shorter one, and we're split testing them both and trying to figure out what works. And you just got to dig in and know your audience, know what you're selling and then sort of fit the story around that so that it speaks directly to them. I'm wondering, we have also gone back and forth on this. You talk about telling a story so it gives a more personal angle so that people can put themselves easily in another person's shoes and experience what you want them to experience on this path to buying a specific product or service. Mm-hmm. But we don't know sometimes if it's better to focus the story and the copy around you, that second person you, like you're probably suffering from this, or let me tell you a story about what I heard from one of your colleagues, you know, that they can easily relate to, and how much of that copy and storytelling should be devoted to the expert behind the scenes that's creating the product we want to sell. So, you know, in my mind, you want to create trust in the source. Otherwise, people aren't going to buy. But people also need to know that their product is, this product is going to hit their pain points. So what's the balance there? How do you introduce an expert and address the pain points and the actual buyer in that story and sales copy?
That's a great question. And it's funny you mentioned that, because I remember I think it was October of last year, I'd actually flown up to Seattle for the first time. I've never been to Seattle before. And I hung out with a friend of mine who's also in, you know, kind of the direct response marketing business. And I'll keep this all anonymous. And then another copywriter showed up and the three of us hung out. And this is one of the best copywriters in the business. It's just like nine figures worth of like sales that came in because of his writing. And we actually discussed this because I was showing an example of piece of copy I wrote that started out with, you know, have you ever felt this way? Like when you're trying to fall asleep at night, you're staring up at the ceiling, you look, right. You glance over at the alarm clock and it's 3:27 in the morning, those red numbers just staring at you. It's just, you know, that nightmare scenario that anyone who's ever struggled with sleep has gone through. And, you know, the other copywriter mentioned that it's better to lead with I than just like force you at someone. You're like, you do this, you know, you probably experienced this. There can be a breakdown of rapport there if you get that wrong. But there, you can tell a compelling story. It's like, I was laying awake last night, I glanced over the alarm clock, it was 3:27 in the morning. And anyone listening to that or reading that, even though it's an I, even though it's like me, focus on them, they're still going to relate to it on their own without, you don't have to like grab them by the lapels and say, hey, I'm telling you the story because you can relate to this because you probably experienced the same thing. They've got their own dialogue in their head going.
Right.
They understand that this story is relevant to them if they pick up on details that really are. I mean, they will make that connection. That's why whenever we go see a movie about the hero's journey, we always love kind of imagining ourselves as the hero. Even though, you know, I'm not a hobbit, so I'm realistically, I can never imagine myself as Frodo, but people love doing that. But anyway, so the reason I tell the story and kept it anonymous is because after we critique copy, instead of my friend showing me downtown Seattle like we planned, we all just smoked a bunch of pot and played Mario Kart or something like that. So I didn't think I'd throw that in there. I don't know why. It was a fun copywriter's evening. Critique copy, smoke pot, drink, play Mario Kart. Good times. I can't wait to go back to Seattle.
Yeah, I love Seattle.
I bet you do, Jeff.
Not for that reason. I've never had that experience, I have to say. But
that's good stuff. Wait, and before to actually really, I have to ask you. It was a good question, so I want to answer without like getting muddled in my tangential bizarreness.
Sorry,
but you really can have a balance of both, and it's one of those things where different copywriters are going to argue about it. Because I've written plenty of sales letters that start out with you. You know, relating to the prospect without diving in too much of the, you know, I did this. So both can work. Anyone listening to this, don't feel paranoid that you're going to get something horribly wrong if you go one way or the other, or if you have a balance of both. You know, all of the above can certainly work. If there's any guideline, it would be if you just have a real blockbuster of a story that's like so attention grabbing, something so shocking happened, go with I, you know, play your ace up front. And that's a good rule for anything. If you have any kind of third person story or any kind of you experience, you can say, hey, if this has ever happened to you and it's just really interesting attention grabbing, prioritize that over any kind of structure. Well, should I put this first? Should it be third person, first person? Just go with what grabs them.
Do you, and then as far as like playing out, and maybe this should come later down the sales journey, but introducing the source as the expert in a field, so you should trust this source to buy this product, is that something that belongs in that initial captivating sales letter, or does that belong later?
It doesn't have to be presented up front if you cannot find a decent way to kind of fit it in. And sometimes it definitely shouldn't be, because there have been some incredibly effective sales messages that were just like, you know, I was laying in bed one night and I burst into tears and I started crying. By the way, I'm the author of this best-selling weight loss book. Anyway, so I was sitting there crying.
Yeah, right. What an awkward interjection there.
Yeah, so I think a good rule of thumb is if you have a story that is really like, I was the underdog, here's all this crap I went through before becoming the authority, then hold off, because you know, it's kind of like Star Wars. It's like, you know, here's Luke Skywalker. He just found out his parents, you know, just got murdered by the Empire. I think that's what happened. big Star Wars fan here. And then it interjects and it's like, and by the way, you should know Luke now is an amazing Jedi and you should totally learn from him because he actually defeat the Empire. Anyway, but back to Luke being this, you know, little kid who's, you know, now homeless. So if you're presenting an underdog story, you can completely hold out on the fact that it's the story of this authoritative person that is now an expert, because as the story plays out, the reader will discover that. Now, on the other hand, if you have someone who is sort of like an authoritative background anyway, like let's say you're a health company and you're sort of the face of the business is a doctor, and he just recently went through a very dramatic experience, tell him up front, you know, that he's a doctor, or have the doctor introduce himself as a doctor up front, because it's not the story of him. We're just assuming it's not the story of him going through med school or something like that.
Right.
It's him. It could be him dealing with a patient. So that's where, yeah, absolutely. Again, you know, the principle is if you got an ace, play it up front. If you can say he's a doctor, you know, introduce his name and I'm doctor such and such. You know, I'm the founder of this clinic. And the other day, this weird guy walked in, et cetera, et cetera. You know.
Right, as long as it provides necessary context to the story, so the story has the impact it should.
Yeah, and that it kind of gets the reader more interested and gets readers involved because they respect the authority when the reader might otherwise kind of be less engaged.
Right. Yes, that makes sense. I also wonder, you know, in going back to, I just thought of this, going back to second person versus first person, and then just kind of the length of the story. Does that tie in, I guess I should say, like the way I learned the foundation of copywriting is if you have a high ticket item, the consideration process for the buyer is going to be longer. So give Yes. them that space. So write a longer story that gets them a little bit more acclimated to the brand and used to the idea of using the product. And then, you know, start with I, that kind of a thing, and then maybe transition to you versus a low entry point product and then make it short. Get right to their pain point. So make the short story with an I, or just go straight to you. Is that a good rule of thumb, would you say, or does it really matter?
I think that is a good rule of thumb with one tweak I would make. Okay. Because we've all seen, you know, like an opt-in page for a free video. It's like, you know, you're not going to make it, give that a 20-page story.
Right, right.
Some marketer will come out of the woodwork. Actually, I tested that. It actually raised opt-ins 5%. It's like, oh, okay. but no, I think you present a really good rule of thumb. Here's the one tweak. I think the major sort of divider between whether you should just do short, you know, get to the point, offer what you got versus a long drawn out thing with a lot of consideration, I really think the difference is if there's money involved. It could be a dollar or it could be $1,000, but I really think once money gets involved and, you know, they're not shopping at Walmart. This isn't Amazon.com. This is a website that they might have just stumbled upon. I think if your page involves an ending where they bust out their credit card, that's where I really do not think you should be concerned about the length of the story or your sales message. You should just be concerned about its impact and let it be as long as it can to sell better. Because busting out that credit card, even for a dollar or even for a penny, is a major, major decision compared to just an opt-in. There's a lot more security involved. There's a lot more guilt or embarrassment involved. What is the phrase? Now we're talking real money. So that is, I think, the dividing line for when you really want to focus on having a good story and a good, compelling sales message. And, length, can be tossed aside. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, good point. Definitely a good point. And, certain industries, certain products and businesses will have to decide for themselves at what point, based on their product portfolio, what point in that lineup they'll want to devote more energy to, a longer sales journey and the stories that go with them. I know for us, we have some Tripwire products, and then beyond that, we have Craig's workshops. And so there's, each company has its own spread of products that they have to consider in that too.
Yeah, it's very individual.
This is interesting to me because no one is asking these questions, or at least I haven't read anything about it and I haven't heard anyone talking about it. But I came from the realm of food journalism and entertainment writing, essentially. For which there were very clear conventions, right? So we found an AP style guide, and then, depending on where I was working, each publishing house had its own set of rules and spellings and all of that jazz. I feel like in the world of copywriting, all conventions go out the window as long as whatever you're doing serves the end point, which of course is the sale of the product. So if you're using essentially like texting language, substituting whole words for numbers like four and you, and using emojis and that kind of stuff, that's totally fine as long as it gets you the sale. So my question is, are there conventions in copywriting? Does that exist or does it matter?
That's a great question. Oh, by the way, before I answer it, I just got to mention, I never, in our talks, I've never learned that about your background. That's really cool.
Yeah, it was 12 years of food journalism, and then I took a quite a bit of a shift, and now I'm in the sort of the small business entrepreneurial realm. So it's been an interesting background to leverage sometimes in conversations with entrepreneurs.
Oh, absolutely. And I guarantee you, me and everyone else listening is now just like, forget what that Nate guy has to say. I want to hear about Jeff's weird transition. I want to hear more about that. I want to hear about the weirdest food you ate.
Oh man, I once had to cook my own emu on a hot rock.
Yes.
And it was at a media dinner, and this is a total tangent. And it was at a media dinner, and they were serving the most ridiculous, outlandish Bombay gin cocktails or something. I can't even, like, it was so weird. It was just weirdest thing, and I didn't know. And then you don't know how to eat emu. Like, I'm sure that there was a proper way for eating hot rock cooked emu, but I don't. I think they gave us chopsticks or something. I was really outlandish.
So you got to use your steak knife or something. That's
right. But more on that another time.
That's perfect.
I want to hear that story. Just let me know.
Everyone's engagement just like triples. They're just copyright. Tell me about the emu.
Tell me about the emu.
That's cool. See, I mean, stuff like that. I mean, people, there's so much information just being piled on out there, but this is what people are starving for. Neat stuff like that. I'm just thrilled that you gave that great example. So now let's watch the charts of engagement going down as I actually provide information. helpful information that'll make you money. It's like, all right. So, oh my God, this live podcast, folks. Now I'm trying to, what the heck was the question specifically?
I was asking as a background, I was talking about
grammar
in writing. Well, not just grammar, but specifically like the conventions in the use of language. So like, is there a style guide that's employed? I don't think so. Is there any rules at all, or does it go out the window for the sake of sales?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I remember. that's a great question. And a lot of people, this kind of goes back to like, does making up stories work? There's a huge amount of people who will condemn poor style, or not poor style necessarily, but a very, let's call it a very casual, modern sort of departure from standard best practices in writing. Let's call it, yeah, because that's a really pithy statement. let's call that just like the more slang type writing.
Right.
People will condemn that and say you shouldn't do that and that's a bad idea because they personally despise it. It has nothing to do with actual test results. I've never heard of people conducting a test and discovering slang lowered conversions. I've seen like multi-million dollar VSLs where within the first couple pages of the PowerPoint on the video, there's a misspelling. I saw one that was running for a long time that not only did it have a misspelling within the first couple slides, it actually had that red zigzaggy line under the word indicating it was misspelled, like you would see in a Word doc. And it was on the PowerPoint. It was a thrilling day for me. I was so happy when I saw that. I just warmed my cockles or cackles or whatever. There's clearly got to be some sort of natural limit to this where you can't just be like, yo, what up, smiley face, buy my stuff. Right. Number one, grammar, some good grammar and style guidelines apply simply because you want your writing to be understandable. You want it to flow. You don't want your reader to get caught up in deciphering what you're saying as compared to being involved in what you are saying, being along for the ride, going through the experience, feeling what you want them to feel, picturing in their mind what you want them to picture. You don't want your writing to get in the way of that. Now, when you want to break a few stodgy rules and have more styled writing, if it can serve that purpose, yes, go for it. Have a more down-to-earth tone. Now, on the other hand, you can run into some issues because it's all very personalized to the voice of your writing. Let's go back to that doctor example. If the sales message is actually coming from the doctor, then you want to stick to the voice being true to him, because otherwise people are going to be wondering, it's like, why is this physician like writing all these winky faces at me in the sales message? Right. It could detract from he's supposed to be kind of, he or she's supposed to be kind of regal. So it's all a means to an end. So some of the other things I've observed about using emojis, like especially in email copy, you want to kind of match what people are traditionally, how people are traditionally communicating with themselves and with their family and with their friends, because people love to tell stories with each other. They love to joke. So in email copy, I'm seeing emojis pop up a lot. And I think it's almost kind of a way to break the fourth wall and just kind of give it that human touch and kind of give it an emotion, give it some humor that can oftentimes be difficult to do with writing. A smiley face can give your writing a good punchline. However, this is sort of similar to telling jokes in an actual sales piece that ends with like getting someone to buy something. It can be very dangerous to tell jokes because if they don't get the joke, if they don't laugh, and you would be shocked by how many people do not get your sense of humor, you may have lost a sale. And it was so easy to avoid. Just don't use humor in the actual closing sales piece where you're actually, selling a product, asking for an order.
Right.
And I think you can apply the same rule with, more styled writing, more emojis. I would not use that kind of communication when you're actually on the page selling something, because selling something is a very serious proposition. This is the moment when people are actually handing over sensitive information. They're giving up money, and there's trust involved. It's a very fragile position. So that's where I would avoid that kind of, a more modern shorthand, smiley face, emoji driven communication. Save it if you're going to use it at all. and you don't have to. Save it for the outer edges of your marketing, like your Facebook ads and your emails, when people kind of have their hair down a bit more, before they're kind of like in your building and you're sitting down to have a more serious talk because money is about to exchange hands.
Yeah, that's a good point. Very good point. It's interesting. What I heard you saying is that if you're telling a story, don't derail the story or the momentum that you're building by countering the character you're creating with a voice or a style that doesn't make sense for them, because then you end up with a confused prospect who isn't likely to finish reading the story because it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. Unbelievable. It's almost like pandering to the audience. Just, you know, pick a voice and go with it. You know, people will respect a stodgy doctor, even if the reader is not stodgy, you know?
Right. Right. Well, and there's a certain expectation in like that a doctor will have a voice that's maybe a little bit more stodgy or academic than your average Joe. So that's, you know, there's some expectation there too, which makes sense.
Yep.
So I'm wondering if you could point to, for, you know, entrepreneurs who are looking to get going, sort of a two-pronged question. One, resources that they should be looking at, books or sites. You know, you mentioned Digital Marketer before. We certainly tapped into them, but anything else you'd recommend? And then if you have an easily accessible sort of storytelling marketing campaign that's out there that people can reference, what would you suggest?
That's a good question. So there are a few things, you know, to kind of almost bring things back to where we started. Here's some really, really awesome news for anyone out there hungry to learn more. You can actually have the same amazing breakthrough I did. You can just Google Gary Halbert, just like I did. And that website is pretty much still up. His sons have taken it over because, unfortunately, Gary passed away, I think it was in 2006. So people can go through the same learning experience I did and stumble upon that site just as I did. It's thegaryhalbertletter.com, if you just want to go to it without Googling him. But you can find it either way. There's like over 1,000 pages of information there. So it's not exactly the easiest, most organized thing to go through, but there are storytelling gems there. Just as writing is an amazing example of storytelling. I mean, you will get sucked in. So that's one resource. You know, as far as my own personal campaigns, I bet a lot of people listening to this have probably seen the ad for a water pitcher that I wrote for. That's a heavily story-driven sales piece. And it's a true story of how I actually flew to California to discover this interesting sort of water filter technology. I would just keep looking up what I write on Early to Rise. Because whenever, you know, Jeff, I don't know if you realize this, but whenever I write an article for you guys, or whenever I write an article for anyone, I'm always trying to think, is there a way I can start this with a story? I don't always 100% succeed, but usually I try and find some little story to tie in there. And anyone who reads those articles on Early to Rise, they can see how the story is really fast, because I actually have an article with a word limit and content to deliver. So I'm not gonna write a 20-page story.
Right,
so people can see how fast they are. Other than that, this actually may be a question that I fall short with, because I know there's a lot of information on storytelling out there. A lot of it for me, I was just really self-taught, other than reading Gary Halbert's stuff and just being fascinated by writing alone. So as far as nitty-gritty down to earth, like novel or short story or screenwriting storytelling, the only one that I can wholeheartedly recommend is a book called Stein on Writing. And the author's name is Saul Stein, S-T-E-I-N. So he just, the title Stein on Writing. And that's available on Amazon. You could probably pick up a used copy for like a few bucks. That book rewired my brain when I read it, like, wasn't quite 20 years ago. Let's call it 15 years ago. I was still in high school. And that book rewired my brain for telling stories. So that's an amazing resource if someone really wants to dive in deep. this interview alone is pretty good for, it will make someone pretty good to go for telling stories if they've just got business thrown and they need some pointers about like starting with time and place, getting sensory experiences. But if they want to dive in deeper, Stein on Writing is a great resource, you know, and then just, you know, keep up to date on what Early to Rise has to offer. And I think you'll have more than enough.
Yeah, piggybacking off of that too, you're definitely right that people should take a look at your page on Early to Rise. So building up content there. Also, I did an interview with Bob Bly recently. You can check out his website at bly.com. But the interview that I did with him, which is in part about writing books, but also about copywriting, that's on Early to Rise. And then I would commend Digital Marketer to anyone out there who just wants a basic course on copywriting. There's not a lot devoted specifically to storytelling, but you'll see where it sort of fits in with the rest of the course. If you go on Digital Marketer, they have a whole selection of courses in copywriting. I think it's Copywriting 101 or something like that. We'll get you started there too. So from our end anyway, those are some great places to start. And of course your resources are great as well. I want to close out with one last question. If it's one you can answer, I always like to ask it, but it's, you know, it's hard to tell sometimes. The art of storytelling in copywriting and marketing and actually copywriting period, how do you see that shifting and changing over the next 5 to 10 years, let's say?
Well, I don't see the art of storytelling shifting at all, because that's just based on who we are as human beings and what we respond to. I do see the media shifting, because that's always shifting. So in the future, essentially, there's going to be more channels. And we just have to remember that the fundamentals don't change, whether we are sending out a direct mail piece or whether we are constructing a Facebook ad campaign. People still respond to stories. And the different media we use is just window dressing. No, it's important to pay attention to the window dressing, but the real juice is never going to change, and that is, you know, get someone involved in a sensory experience that they can relate to and that can inspire them.
Do you think that, I feel like we're starting to see a little bit of this now, that graphic media, so images and videos especially, are going to supplant copy in the sales process?
I think they're a wonderful addition. You know, they kind of mix together much in the same way that someone can go read a book or they can watch a movie. So we're already seeing that live VSLs with actual talking heads can do very well. So absolutely. I think the important thing to remember is that whether it's words or whether it's pictures or whether it's a moving image, at the heart, they're all sort of tools to bring about the story, which brings about the feelings, which brings about the inspiration and the bonding. So they all sort of come together for this common purpose.
Right. The elements remain the same, whatever the medium is.
Yeah. Like I said, not to put it down too much, but it's like the window dressing. So, you know, if something is more visual driven, then go with visuals, but always remember the point. Though, even if it's a visual, the best visuals still tell a story.
Right. Absolutely. Something that we can relate to and connect with. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Nate, thank you so much. We could talk about this, and I'm sure I got crazy emu stories to go back, so we could keep this going. But for our listeners anyway, I want to cut it short here. If anyone's interested in reading more of what Nate has been sharing with the ETR world, just go to ETR.com, like I said, and search Nate Rifkin. His entire archives are on there, and hopefully you'll be contributing for a while yet. You always give us some great stuff, Nate, so I really appreciate that. It's very valuable to our audience. But they can also go to your website, which is naterifkin.com.
Yep. And if they do, I've kind of, you know, how do I put this? I've held myself up to my own standard as best I could. And that it's like, I started that website with one goal in mind, is that I'm going to tell crazy freaking stories. So if anyone wants to hear the horrible things I've gone through, a bankruptcy and all that, and going broke and then, and climbing out of it, I tell some pretty embarrassing stuff at that site.
So it's the Nate Rifkin reality show on NateRifkin.com.
Yeah, it's the Nate Rifkin train wreck on NateRifkin.com. So
everybody loves a train wreck.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I knew that. So that's why I started that site with that in mind. So yeah, I appreciate you mentioning that.
Absolutely. So Nate, thank you so much again. Hopefully we'll have you back on the podcast in the future. We can talk about, you know, other elements to copywriting and see how you're doing. But just so folks know, the extent to which you've been successful in the copywriting world is if it needs to be said, but I think you just told me that you hit the $200 million mark for sales because of your marketing campaigns. Is that right?
Almost. Just remove one zero.
Oh, did I miss 20 million? 20 million. Sorry. I just inflated that a little bit. But still.
Yeah, the good story to them. The 200 million is the, aspirational. Let's say it now and it'll be true soon. I mean, actually, I will keep updating you. It's I've made $20 million for Agora, over $20 million. And basically, I'm still writing for them. So it's probably just a matter of time before I send you another email. Hey, Jeff, could you edit the number? Went up again.
Hey, that's good news. I don't mind doing it. Love to promote you. You're doing great stuff. So
thanks.
Nate, thanks again for your time today. And we'll see you back on the podcast soon.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it.
That was an awesome episode. Thanks again, Nate. I know there are a lot of ETR radio listeners out there who are looking to grow their marketing efforts, and these marketing storytelling tips will be huge for them. I'd love to hear what you think about the show today and how you use Nate's advice to grow your own customer base and build your brand. So keep me posted. You can send me an email and the ETR team an email at support@earlytorise.com. You can also send a message to Craig if you want to engage with him. You can reach out to him on Instagram at instagram.com/realcraigballantyne. Or you can reach out to him at Twitter. His handle there is Craig Ballantyne. Hey, thanks you guys for listening to Early to Rise Radio. Please head over to iTunes if you like the show and rate it, give it 5 stars, share it with your friends. And don't forget, build your belief system, own your life, and never stop learning.